Hello, everybody. Hello, Shehad. Thanks for your time. Thanks that
Hi.
you are in our
Hello,
podcast.
Jihad. Hi. Hi.
Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure. Thank you, Amin
Good.
and Peter. And I've been following some of the other podcasts and interviews you're doing. So it was a great honor for me that you asked me. I don't believe I deserve to be on the list of other interviews you had. So maybe you're desperate or something.
You're
But
right.
I'm very happy to be here.
No,
And
no.
not at all desperate, Björn, very interesting. And you know, it's not only about the extreme famous archers. For me, you're famous too because you promote archery in a way not many do. So
Thank
you
you. I
bring
appreciate it.
people to the public, out to the schools. You do a lot for archery. You know, others, you mean, you know what, whatever Lars Anderson or whatever he shows off and he inspires maybe a few to do the same.
Sure.
But you bring archery to the people, and that's for me important. That you
Yeah,
know,
thank you.
archery and like your website, Archery for All. I like this, you know. But maybe you want to talk then about it. But first of all, maybe a short introduction: who you are, where you come from, what's your profession? Yeah, Peter.
I
So,
like. I'm
yeah,
sorry
we
if
are not at school. You simply
I
can
like
talk.
to
We
say
have.
something.
Yes, Peter. Sure.
Armin, of course, is wrong because
Oh.
we only invite famous and great archers.
Great
But
archers, yes.
So
some
you
are
are
not.
here.
Some are not so
So
famous.
that's why you're here. And we are
Okay.
not
Maybe.
desperate.
And maybe you don't know Peter, but we had already a podcast because he did a very interesting series of podcasts and he had a lot of very interesting people in his podcast. He did a complete video series. I don't know how many did you do? 20, 25,
I
30?
think I counted in total that some people I did one or two interviews,
Like
but the
Murad did
then
it too.
yeah, with Murat did a couple, with Ali from Iran I did a couple. In total, there was actually about nearly 50 interviews, but with individual people, probably about 40 or so. So that was during the COVID season, so I tried to use my time wisely there.
It makes totally sense. It was very interesting what they had to say, and your questions always on point. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, again, it's an honor to be here and to be sitting with you guys. And you are like an extension of the archery family that we are building internationally. So
Thank you.
it's very nice. A very short introduction about myself.
Yes.
I started
It's enough. Okay.
yeah.
A little longer. Okay.
My first exposure to archery was when I was a young boy. My mother, she's still alive. May God preserve her. She always encouraged me to do different sports. And during the holiday season, she kicked me out of the house. She goes, "Go and be busy outside." So she would always be reg she would always find some type of sports club to put me in: swimming, basketball, XYZ. One of them was archery. So I tried archery that time, but that wasn't actually the beginning of where my passion for archery came. When I was about 18 or 19, a friend of mine, we started to read a bit more history about Islam. You can probably guess my name and my features
I like to
Really? as a Muslim.
interrupt you.
Yes.
You were born in England or in Palestine?
Correct, correct. I was born
In
in
England.
England. My parents actually, my father's from North Africa, Libya. And my mother from South Africa, but born in London, raised in London, born into a Muslim family.
So there were a lot of possibilities they can put you into sporting events and schools
Definitely,
and so,
yeah.
yeah,
I was
I
very
understand.
fortunate that we had many opportunities for different clubs and sports.
I understand.
So around that age, 18, 19, was reading a more about history of Islam and things like that, and we came across archery as part of the Islamic civilization and heritage and things like this and the different battles. So my friend and I, you know, we had these kind of romantic ideas. Oh, let's try to reenact this or bring it to life again.
Great.
For those that may not know, archery in Islam is actually not just a sport, but it's actually more of a way of life and part of our religion in a way. We can talk about this later. Anyway, so we found a local archery club. We did a beginner's course there. And at the same time, we also wanted to learn horseback archery. We didn't know how to ride or anything. So we said, look, let's go and find somewhere to learn to ride. So we, at the same time, we went to a stables. So one day we are doing archery and a different day we're learning to ride. So about 3 or 4 months later, we now thought, okay, we have our basics of riding, archery. We want to now join together. We don't have anyone to teach us. And so we're looking on the internet and finding out. Now, at that time, this is probably around 2000 and... No, sorry. This is 1998, 99, around that time. In England, horse archery is pretty much non-existent, except one or two people who are very hard to reach. So there was one person who lives in Wales, probably from London, is about 3 or 4 hours away. I couldn't get to him. I couldn't reach him. Anyway, our research, we came across, and I'm sure you came across him as well, Abdul Majid, Christian Schrader. And so we connected with him. We went out to visit him. In fact, at that time, he was running clinics. Every month, you come for a weekend of horse archery training, introduction. So we went there, and it was summertime. So we were all eager, excited to go there. But, you know, typical German, he was very strict with us, very kind of regimental, friendly, friendly at the same time, but very, very strict. And so we remember at one point he had a valley. He was renting a valley, some horses there. So we were training all day. It was very hot. The sun was on our head. We're sweating. So we said to him, can we go get some water? He said, yeah, sure. He said, come here. He said, you look over there. We said, where? He said, there, 2 miles is a well. You can go and get water there.
It's a bit harsh.
So we had to walk, come back. So maybe he was testing us. I don't know. But very, very memorable experience.
A kind of boot camp.
Boot camp, exactly.
Drill instructor.
So from that time, we came back to England, continued with our archery. Now we became a basic instructor, archery instructor, and we opened our own club in a more inner city area. So closer to where, you know, minority children are, inner city, urban, where they have no chance of doing archery at all. So we teamed up with a rugby club because they had a big field. So we bought some equipment, we store it there. Every Sunday, people can come, families, everyone. It was, it was nice. a good vibe. Then we started to invite Christian Schrader Abdul Majid to England. So maybe 2 or 3 times each year, he comes over for a weekend workshop, basic workshop, to just introduce people to horse archery. What is horse archery? What is traditional archery? We didn't know anything. But it's very important that we try to learn from people who knew what they're talking about. Abdul Majid, he had a good experience with Kashai, of course. And so he had a lot of experience with him. So we learned from him in that way. Then we started to go to competitions now. Like we got invitation to, I remember our first competition was in South Korea, in fact. So Master Kim, he was inviting different people around the world. And again, at this time, England is very underdeveloped for horse archery. So the famous people at that time is still like, you know, Lukas Novotny. We have a couple of people from Europe. Koreans also quite developed.
Petra Engländer.
Yes, exactly. So these people were quite developed. A couple of people, other people from the States. So we were very fortunate. We had invitation to Seoul, to South Korea. Did a competition there. And there is a very good place to network and meet many people. So there was my first time. I meet Lukas Novotny. I think I met Mihai Kozme, maybe, think. I met Ali from Iran. And many, many other people. So, and then just continued from there. I came back to England and We're running the club each Sunday, giving more exposure to archery, traditional archery. At that time, I must admit, we were a little bit narrow-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Our attitude was a little bit too narrow.
Mm-hmm.
We used to say that the club was just for traditional archery.
Mm-hmm.
And our intention was to help. I mean, the club is open for everyone, but specifically for Muslims to take up archery because it's part of the religion and things
like this. Yeah, of course.
And instead of being too narrow to say only traditional archery, it should be open for any archery.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to come with a recurve bow or compound bow, no problem. We welcome everyone. Mm. As long as you want to do archery, it's not a problem. Exactly.
Yeah, one question in between, if I may.
Yes, sure.
Quickly, Shihad, because you said you did this basic archery course in the UK, but it was an three fingers with an Olympic recurve, I guess.
Correct.
Did you start then shooting thumb release? I guess at one point in time you started thumb release shooting an Asiatic bow.
Thumb release was when we met with Christian Schrader, with Abdul Majid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This was our first exposure to learning how to do thumb release. Mm-hmm. And then we bring it back to England.
Okay.
We try to practice it with it ourselves. And we invite him again and again because we have to learn more and more and make sure we're doing it correctly.
Yep.
So this was our first exposure to that as well.
Okay. Okay. Fine. Good. Only that I get my
thing. Yeah, that's fine. Yes,
I also like to say something. As you may know, I'm often the, as you call it, the advocatus diaboli. Mm-hmm. I like to ask about many things.
Sure, please.
Because you say archery is a part of Islam, of religion. Yes. And it is like that. But if you think about it, it's part of many religions.
Definitely,
if
of course.
Think about Buddhism and
absolutely.
Also, Shintoism and so on. So
for sure.
It's not especially an Islamic
it's a good point you make, Peter. I'm not saying that it's only for Islam. Many different civilizations and cultures have archery, and this is a beautiful thing because it is part of our humanity.
Yeah.
If you look at Aboriginal communities, mm-hmm. and when I say Aboriginal, not just Australian, but native communities worldwide, pre-industrial era, long time ago, thousands of years ago, those communities never met each other. Mm-hmm. So for example, jungles of South America and the sub-Saharan Africa and the steppe of Eurasia and Japan.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe at one time this was one landmass, but when it broke apart, these people did not know each other. But what is amazing, each of them have archery.
Yeah, and almost developed of their, and almost of developed at the same time.
Yes.
Or time spent.
Amazing.
Kind of like.
Yeah, this is amazing because they have no communication, they have different language, they have different culture.
Yeah.
How is it that all of them have archery and they're using for similar things, for warfare or survival, for hunting, for defense?
To me, it is simple because it's a kind of logical development.
Yes.
And in some way I'm a kind of alternative history believer.
Yes.
In my opinion, there were a lot more intercourse with ancient peoples than we think.
Definitely, because right.
I'm quite sure about this.
Yes.
And
for sure. I think there is some overlapping with certain civilizations.
Yeah.
Some I also think if let's say a medieval noble likes to own an Asiatic bow, he was able to.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Because we know,
they know that there is one in the first
place? Because they know everything. Because they intertraded. Think about in the Stone Age, they intertraded with salt and steel with everything, with how is it called, this Bernstein, how is it called?
Amber.
Amber.
Mm.
All over, and ivory, and all this, and also and spices and herbs and so
look
on.
Look at the Silk Road as example. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm sure.
I'm sure.
But I think, definitely trade, yes.
I'm the spiritual person here, but I think, and when you see the Aborigines, because you mentioned them, they had still this, or they still have this understanding of communicating between each other without a phone, without anything.
So they simply think about
okay, we meet this time, this place, and they all come because they have this. And
of course,
why not? You know, there's no space and time in
Armin. We only know about this because Western so-called scientists wrote about it. You never know what their meeting, their date of the aborigine. Let's meet there at the mountain or at the I don't know where at this big rock. And you know, we are so we easily believe that an indigenous or aborigine community, they are not also humans like we, and they didn't play pranks on scientists. And you know, I read a lot about the North American Indians, about the Native Americans, and there are a lot of stories. They said, oh yes, I can feel this, I can feel that.
And I talk to the tree and the wind tells me the story.
And they pranked the scientists and the travelers, you know. And we don't know. And I'm always very suspicious if something is praised too high, and yes, they can communicate over miles.
We can do it. Even with Zoom, sometimes happen that you think about someone and he calls you.
With Zoom, Skype, we can.
No, it happens that someone pops up in your mind, and three seconds later the phone calls and this guy is on the phone.
Armin,
with industrialization and with ego mind blowing up, we forgot a little about it.
But we all have the skill to it. Armin. Yes, believe what you like to believe.
Of course, and you believe what you like to believe, Peter. That's fine.
But
we should talk about Peter, Vashihad again.
We can, but it's connected to this subject. You know what? I'm, as you know, Armin, I'm a lot in mentalism and in this stuff and also stage tricks and so on.
In stage tricks, you are more.
No. Mentalism is the same. You know, when you think, oh, Peter haven't called me since 3 weeks, maybe. So of course I will call you the next or the day after. And if I call you in 3 days, you will say, I thought about it and now he called me. Because yes, we love to do it. Our brain love. If you're looking into the sky and you see some clouds, you say, oh, look, it's like a dragon, or it's like a sheep, or
last time I took a photo of a dragon.
We like to have connections, and we like to interpret.
Yes, everything. But we have them. It's not that we like them; we have them. I had once, as one example, I had a friend. She was not so close to me, but I knew her. She was a singer, or she's still alive. And I felt all of a sudden the taste of a cappuccino in my mouth and her face. And then I called her, or I wrote an SMS and said, "Enjoy your cappuccino." I said, what the heck? How do you know? You're 100 kilometers away. Wow. So it's
because in the back of your head, you knew he's drinking all the day. She's drinking all the day.
I didn't even know that she drinks cappuccino.
You know how often
Peter, it's okay. You believe simply what you can see. It's fine.
No,
only imagine what the light spectrum with your visible eye shows you and what it doesn't show you.
But I'm skeptical.
I'm sorry, but we drifted a little apart now.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, but we are not here to, we can discuss these things when we are so desperate and have no one, you know.
Look, it's okay. Everyone obviously has their own belief. It's all interesting, and we should hear everyone's views if it's worth anything from Islamic point of view. Our reasoning and our understanding is that everything comes from God. Okay, for the Muslim belief, I understand some people don't believe in one God or higher power. That's fine. So everything is comes from God. Sometimes we have this, we call it inspiration. But just like you think of someone or some thoughts come to you or something happens, this is all inspired by God. He sends down things for a reason.
But Jihad, it's not it's not a kind of strange if you think if a person you have not met for some month or years and the person came into your mind, it's not a miracle or so.
Sometimes these things cannot always be explained through science. Sometimes it just happens like that.
But some because people science, make the, but some because, people make the experience, and that's the difference.
True, you
know,
right?
You know what the crazy thing is, Jihad. I'm really kind of atheist, I like to say.
Fine.
But how should I say it? There's as you say, there's more, or like Goethe said, between heaven and earth that we understand, and science is 100% not able to explain everything.
Of course, they will never
be. Because the scientists are not more than that old alchemists of the Middle Ages. They say, I look at the stars and I tell you the futures. This is now they have Hubble. Back then they had, you know, they looked through a beer glass. So I don't know.
That's right.
And you know, I'm an atheist, but I don't believe in the Big Bang theory. I don't believe in evolution because it's as unbelievable if, like you say, God made everything.
Right.
You know, so I say it, to me, it's a miracle. To me, I can't understand it. I can't. Right. I don't know why the universe came into.
It just depends how you describe for yourself God or this universal energy or
higher power there, or anything
source,
like that.
Whatever you name it.
It's a secret to me. It's a secret to me. And if a scientist says to me, you know, there were nothing, and then the nothing exploded, and that was the Big Bang.
Yeah, this Big Bang, I don't believe.
Okay. Oh, the nothing exploded. I understand. So it's crazier than religion. Sorry if I say this. It's
No problem.
As crazy as religion. Yeah. Because if you say there was a big God, if his name is Allah or Yahweh or, you know, everyone.
Whatever,
It's as logic as you say he made all the things and the stars and the skies and everything as if one says but there were nothing and it exploded and then everything came and by accident there were animals and so on. It's crazy to me.
So it's
a secret.
Yes. So in Islam we have something called the fitra. Fitra. F-I-T-R-A. Fitra means the original state of man. And when we look at Aboriginal people, native people, this is kind of the original state, simplified living, natural living, okay? Obviously, we all know the modern way we're living today is very far from that. Archery, we believe in our culture, not just culture, in our history and in our religion is part of these fitra elements.
Yep.
So archery is part of a natural way of living.
Yeah. Okay, because I like to be skeptic. So when people invented archery or, you know, the fire maybe, this was fitra, as you call it. This was the natural status of a human race.
So what it means is, In Islamic perspective, the fitra is the way of living in accordance to the way God created you, to the way you have been created.
Okay.
We do many things today which are unnatural, but we're still living.
What is unnatural?
Everything is natural.
Like, for example,
you can't do anything. And yes, you can. I don't like to say it. Of course, we can do unnatural things.
There's many, many, many unnatural things. But what we mean is living in accordance to the way God wanted you to live, the way that is beneficial for you.
But when was the exact, you know, you could say, I don't know, I don't know how it is in Islam, how the first people were. Is it like Adam and Eve, like that?
Right. Yeah, we believe in Adam and Eve. Correct.
Okay. So that was the natural state. So they lived in a kind of paradise in the Garden of Eden, and just lived by the fruits, and you know, and that was the natural state. So they had no bow and arrow. They had, I don't know. You know, when is the
sorry, real... just 1 second, Peter. I'm having a audio issue here. Just 1 second. Sorry. What happened here?
We still hear you.
Okay, I can hear you now. Sorry. Yes.
Okay, yeah. Fine.
Sorry, just... How do you decide when was this exact state of
Fitra.
How God wanted Fitra. Us to live? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How can I say? Mankind themselves. Okay, so when you're created, even today, look, a baby born today mm-hmm. is in the state of Fitra. Just like a baby born 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's the same.
I agree.
It's not like, you know, we were closer to God that time and now we are away. No.
Yeah.
It's the way that we decide then to live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Do we live closer to according to the law of God or mm-hmm. our own laws? Mm-hmm. Or do we make things up? And sometimes we move away from the way God wanted us to live. Yes. Sometimes we move closer.
Yeah. But the baby doesn't decide.
The environment, the parents,
yeah.
the mm-hmm. friends, many, everything, many things.
Yeah. But on the other side, it sounds a little like in the Christian religion with the Ten Commandments, you know, that Moses was on this mountain and right. wrote these Ten Commandments. So these are the rules you have to live now. Yes. Then you are the Christian idol person. If you break one of these rules, then... Oh, then we need to, yeah, the quote cat is coming. So I guess
she lives in Fitra.
True, very true. Animals, if you look in animal kingdom,
yep.
yeah,
they maintain their life in the way they were made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You understand?
So they can't decide. They just live how they live.
This is the difference between humans and animals. Yes. They don't have free will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't want to get off too.
No, but it's still interesting. No. Interesting discussion. I guess some of our viewers will like that too.
But this is I just want to give a basic introduction as to why archery is important in Islam for Muslims mm-hmm. and where it is placed in the history of Islam. And you may be surprised to know many Muslims today do not even know that archery is part of their history.
I know. I was one year in Lebanon. I was teaching at a school, and of course I had mostly Muslims, and I always said, listen, okay. your Prophet Muhammad told you need to teach your kid to ride, to swim, right. and to shoot bow and arrow. So the latest I can teach you now, finally. And then, oh yeah, said, you make your prophet happy.
That's right.
I like to say one bad thing. In some cases, they replaced archery with a Kalashnikov.
No, exactly. So this was one of the reasons behind why I wanted to get into archery to revive mm-hmm. a sunnah of the Prophet. When we say a sunnah, it means a practice.
Yep.
So this was definitely one of the practice of the Prophet, his companions, his supporters.
Yep.
So it was part of their daily life. And for Muslims, our ideal way of living is the way they lived.
So closest as possible to how they live.
Yeah, so we want to live close as possible in terms of their values mm-hmm. and their morals, etc.
Their rituals.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't mean that, okay, I'm going to go live in the desert now and shun the West and everything. No, I can still live. I drive a car, have a phone.
It's there.
Yeah, it's your morals,
mm-hmm.
what comes out of your mouth, your attitude and your intention in your heart.
Jihad, I like to ask you something. Is there something about that archery in Muslim culture mentioned in the Quran or
yes.
how where you got where
very I get good it point from? Very good point, Peter. Archery is mentioned in the Quran in a few different places, a few chapters, and also mentioned in the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad himself,
mm-hmm.
where he
but like a kind of teaching or a kind of part of the religion or just mentioned because in the Bible it's also mentioned, of course.
For example, I'll give you. There's one verse where God says to the believers, he says, prepare yourself with as much strength as you can against those who are fighting against you.
Mm-hmm.
And when they take this word strength, mm-hmm. when they define it, he means archery.
Mm-hmm.
So you're actually really? Specifically okay. mentioning, prepare yourself okay. with archery. Because mm-hmm. at that time,
they it's had- It's the same word? Or it's the same word?
No, no, not the same word, but the definition. When you look mm-hmm. at the definition of what it means-
mm-hmm.
How, who says what it means? The, when there's written strengths, so you translate it with archery, no, who says it?
So the prophet himself said, this means mm-hmm. archery.
Yeah.
This okay. particularly means archery.
Okay, okay.
And so they had obviously many types of weapons, sword, spear, mm-hmm. knives, everything. But here specifically, here it means archery. So,
yeah.
You know, riding also, you know, horses mentioned in the Quran as well.
Yeah.
So anything mentioned in the holy book, you know, is something that we deem to be important, to be mm-hmm. sacred.
Yeah.
So it is mentioned there, as well as in many of the traditions of the Prophet himself, encouraging people to take up archery, like Amin said, you know, mm-hmm. archery. So the main four or five disciplines, we have archery, riding,
mm-hmm.
swimming, wrestling,
yeah,
and maybe you could say also sword play, sword mm-hmm. fighting.
Yeah.
So these are the main five.
Mm-hmm.
There are other external disciplines, or we don't really call them sports, but mm-hmm. disciplines is a little bit more yeah. serious.
You know what?
But these it's are the like, main five.
It's like, I'm sure you don't know this writer, but Amin knows him. He was a German writer,
mm.
and when I was a little boy, I read a lot of his books. His name
Karl
was
May?
Karl May. Yes,
yeah. mm.
and because I read this, I like to kind of make a bridge to Islam, because these are kind of manly. How you call it?
Skills.
Skills, yes, manly skills. You have yes. to be able to swim,
correct,
right,
short
fight, to shoot,
yeah. and of course yeah. wrestling, hand and fighting,
boxing absolutely. Maybe or something right. like that. Yeah.
yeah, yeah. She had us Brazilian jiu-jitsu instead.
exactly. Yeah. So, we also see that's kind of one of the close things to the wrestling that they have.
Yeah.
But you know, with the archery as well, some of the encouragement we have. And the indication from the Prophet Muhammad is that, you know, for many people today, archery is just like any sport. So, mm. you know, they try archery, then they try tennis, then they try other sport. But in Islam, archery is a sacred discipline. And for archery, you get much reward.
Mm-hmm.
You actually get reward for possibly entering Jannah. So I'll give you one narration from what the Prophet says. We call it hadith. One hadith, he says, with one arrow, God will enter three people into paradise.
Mm-hmm.
The first person is the one who makes the arrow.
Because mm-hmm.
you need to have okay. someone.
I thought if you hit them.
Not yet.
You're going to paradise.
So the first one is the person who makes the arrow. Mm-hmm. But the condition is you have to make the arrow with a good intention.
Of course, yeah.
Number two.
What is a good intention for an arrow?
Okay. It depends on the circumstance. So here it is to defend your people, to defend maybe your religion, to protect your people.
Okay.
Not okay. just for
attacking or
just for attacking for no reason or
and also not for target archery, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean at this time it's really for even if you make intention to copy what the Prophet himself did, this is good enough.
Mm.
So number one, making the arrow. Number two, the one who shoots the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you will know, you know, in history, the person who makes the arrow and shooting it, not always the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the army, you know, you have somewhat, maybe a group of people who are dedicated to just producing thousands and thousands and thousands of arrows.
Yep.
This is their job. You mm-hmm. know, whoever's yep. in charge, the Sultan, the king says, mm-hmm. you are my arrow makers.
Yep.
And then you give the arrows to the archers. Now, archer has to know how to shoot the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just simply pull and release.
Yep.
You have to know, is it stiff? Is it weak spine? Is it correct tuning to the bow, etc.? The third person is the one who collects the arrow
mm-hmm.
once it's been shot. Now, mm-hmm. traditionally you have a battle, you have two sides. Mm-hmm. When the battle is finished, mm-hmm. they don't just go home and go their separate ways.
Yeah.
You send out scouts mm-hmm. and you say, collect all of the weapons you can mm-hmm. find. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes people shot arrows, they're not damaged, they're still in good mm-hmm. condition.
Yeah.
And many
still weapons there.
That you valuable items like mm-hmm. armory and...
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So for these three people, mm-hmm. they're all connected with one arrow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
a fourth person, the one receiving the arrow, is also connected mm. to the game.
It depends, you know, why you're receiving it. If you're an enemy, then you have mm. bad luck. But
bad luck, yeah.
But for these three, mm-hmm. we believe that we get possible entry to heaven. Now, when we look at why people enter heaven, mm-hmm. it's normally because they're very religious and they're praying a lot, mm-hmm. reading a lot. But none of this is linked with worship.
Yeah.
This is just shooting an arrow, making mm-hmm. an arrow, collecting. Yeah. Yeah. Something very mm-hmm. kind of easy and, or enjoyable.
And even in the time, they had target practice, because you don't send an archer without any practice. He's not an archer to a battlefield and let him shoot the first arrow to an enemy. So yeah. they still had targets, and it still counts in a way that you shoot, you know.
Exactly.
Somebody picks the arrow, one shoots it, and yeah. you get the arrow by yourself, or you have someone picking up the arrow again. So
you could be three people in one. You could make your arrow, shoot the arrow, collect the arrow. Exactly. So even in the target practice, you have so much reward for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you know, traditionally in the Victorian times in England, they actually had on the target range where you're shooting, you have targets here and targets here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they shoot one way,
mm-hmm.
they're and walking, back, and they turn around and shoot.
Through the other direction. Yeah.
Now, what's interesting is in another saying of the Prophet is that he says, between the area of two targets mm-hmm. is a garden of paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, we believe they also used to shoot in this method. So they shoot one way,
mm-hmm.
they turn around, collect, and shoot the other way.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the Ottoman period, for example, mm-hmm. the Ottoman sultans, and we look at their archery area, what they call Ok Meydan.
Mm-hmm.
The Ok Meydan, they used to make very big.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to Istanbul now, you go to the area Ok Meydani, the Okçalı Vakfi Club now
mm-hmm.
is on the original site of the Ok Meydan in the Ottoman times.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. But it's very small now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, mm-hmm. they can shoot 70 meters Olympic mm-hmm. distance. Mm-hmm. But that whole area with all the houses around used to be only for archery.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So when they understood this saying mm-hmm. that God is saying between two targets
is
the garden of paradise, they want a big garden.
Yeah, of course, obviously.
They don't want to make it small.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Jihad? I kind of like, not I kind of, I really appreciate the idea that there are special persons picking up my arrows. So they get connected to my shooting.
True, of course.
This is
a way of training young boys, young girls, learning how to collect, how to hold the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good introduction for them. And then they're watching you, or they're watching their teacher, their master, their ustaz shooting the arrow. And they are there on the side doing service,
mm-hmm.
waiting to collect and waiting to give the arrow.
Mm-hmm. Jihad, because you mentioned girls, is it true that girls were on the shooting range in Islamic?
100%.
Really?
Really? Yes.
Because you know why I ask? Because I used to do for, I think, 4 years in a Vienna school. There were a lot of Turkish Islamic children.
Mm.
And in the afternoon, you know, school, I was an archery teacher, and there were some Turkish girls, you know, with a, how is it called?
Hijab, with the
hijab,
scarf.
And hijab, so on. And they were really surprised that they were allowed to, and of course, and I had to touch them, you know, to correct them a little, that
We'll talk about this.
I had the impression they were surprised and they were very shy to do it.
Right. Let me explain. So there could be a number of reasons, but in our Islamic context, okay, if we look at Korea, South Korea, okay, South Korea, they have very strong archery heritage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it has even survived to Olympic level today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know on the Olympics, South Korea always going to take a medal.
It's superior. Yeah.
It's granted. Like this. Yeah. It's like this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they have maintained their historical connection with their archery heritage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With the Muslims, we had a cut.
Mm-hmm.
End of the Ottoman period,
mm-hmm.
Turkish Revolution, Ataturk, etc., there was a cut.
Mm-hmm.
We lost a lot of information.
Okay.
So much information, manuscripts, books, people's knowledge, they died mm-hmm. out. All of this we lost.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's as if we have a puzzle,
mm-hmm.
but we only have a few pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to make the picture, but we don't have all the pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
How is this connected to girls in archery?
I will explain.
Thank you.
So these Turkish girls, it's not in their heritage to know about archery
mm-hmm.
because from the Turkish Revolution, they didn't allow any archery.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't allow
any Islamic activities. So Islam has changed. What you like to tell us is, so Islam has kind of changed a little, or just the culture?
No.
Lost.
Okay, at the end of the Ottoman period, or if we look at the Ottomans, they made archery to the top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, archery was, like today, football is the big sport. Archery mm-hmm. was their main sport, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like in South Korea.
Mm-hmm. Like in South Korea. Yeah. They held very strong to this tradition because they know there is reward in it. It's following the prophet. It's part of the religion. We know all of the sultans, they have thumb ring.
Mm-hmm.
They're holding like this. Everyone is doing archery
mm-hmm.
because it's very sacred discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And also fun.
Okay. When the Turkish Revolution happened and Turkey, etc., the Ottoman dynasty crumbled.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Now we're losing our heritage, we're losing our history.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why these girls that you're teaching, they probably never even tried archery before, or they never knew that they can do it.
But yeah. Just a moment. Yeah, you're right. You're right. But the Turkish boys had no problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. This is exactly
if the culture was lost, so it's also true for the boys.
What she had said.
Right. But the point is that why is it only for boys? It was also for girls.
Yeah.
Okay. So for whatever reason.
How do you know?
No, because we have historical narrations and recordings of even in the time of the prophet, some of the women were warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them on the battlefield with the sword.
Now you have your female warriors again, Peter. He always doesn't believe in female warriors.
Really? You have to read history, Peter. There's many.
Tell him.
We have many female warriors, which we're very, very proud of in Islam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And many of them were fighting in the middle of the battle, mm-hmm. but they're covered.
How do you see them? How do you know it?
Because the prophet told us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's an explanation.
This is what I mean. It's not just making up and romanticizing. We have narrations, recordings, many people witnessed with their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It was this person and this person.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you one short story. The prophet, they're in a battle. And everywhere he's looking, left, he looks right, he sees this same person jumping, fighting,
mm-hmm.
taking a sword, cutting someone's head, shooting a bow and arrow. In the end of the battle, he's asking, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
The person came to him. She took off the scarf. It's a female.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
She was stronger than the man, she felt.
Some of them, yes, were like this. Because, you know, really? Look, not, yeah. not all...
You really believe that yes. a woman is physically stronger than no. a male warrior?
Doesn't really? Doesn't have to be just physical, Peter.
No?
Doesn't have to be physical.
No. Jihad, if an average man is swinging a sword, he's more powerful than a woman. That's true.
Okay.
That's simply true.
Right.
But then you need to see that the Ottomans have two handers, heavy swords, they had this more lightweight, very agile, and that fits more and not so muscular body because you're way faster.
They fought, they fought against other, how you call it, saber forces warrior.
Yeah.
So why should be, if they have the same equipment, and what you're saying, I mean, is not true, because if you say it's a long, heavy sword, so this small person with a lighter sword can't get into.
Of course, because you are slow with your big sword.
No,
of course you are.
You know, look, Peter. Look, you know, in battle situation, it's not just about who is bigger and stronger.
No,
so, of course. No.
What counts? No. So what counts?
Okay.
What
many,
is counting?
Many. What counts is strategy.
And the men are not so strategic like the female.
I'll give you an example, Peter. Okay.
Yeah.
We have in the life of the Prophet, he had many, many battles. He was defending himself from Byzantines, Persians, this group.
Yeah.
Okay. Romans.
Yeah.
Many times his group is very small. Maybe, for example, one battle, 313 Muslims.
Yep.
Okay. This was the first major battle in Islam. This is all of the Muslims on the planet Earth at that time, 313. This is in the beginning of Islam.
Yeah.
They are fighting another group of also Arabs who were the non-believers. How many of them? 1,000.
Yeah.
Three times. So one man to three.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. They became victorious.
Yeah, we have the same stories in our.
Oh, good. So if it's numbers
true
or power, then if we look at that number, then that group should have killed all the Muslims.
Jihad, I understand you, but. You know, these are kind of legendary. You know, if you believing 100% into the Quran and in the Prophet's doings, Muhammad's doings, and the stories, of course. But we had the same here. They said yes, there were just 100 warriors, and they fought 3,000, and they and so on. So you know, they all made it up. And of course, if you're saying
everyone Quran, can believe what they like,
In Islam, it isn't like that. Okay, I accept your opinion, but that's not the kind of historical story for me. Because you know, if you believe everything what is written in the Bible, you know, Joshua went through around Jericho and blowed the trumpet and all the.
Yeah,
all scrambled and so
very low frequency. You can do this, you know.
Yes, of course. I know all that stories. Believe me.
Okay. So, I don't know, but that's why I'm saying technically.
But if what I want to say is, if that is your argument for saying, "Oh yeah, female warriors they could be stronger than men," that's not true. Why we have today separate classes in boxing, women and men? If that was not the problem, that the physical strengths or so in fighting, so we must not have girls boxing and men boxing.
Maybe we change.
And so on. You understand what I mean?
Maybe the difference was not so pronounced like it is now.
Oh yeah,
there or were maybe they had women. More strong women. Or when you look at Russia, they still have a few of this. You know this.
Exactly. No, really think strong about.
Woman,
think
and I would not fight with one. So
think about think about a big real warrior. Let's say one mate.
Yeah, but they are not all that big. You had to take everyone.
And he smashes his sword Yeah. Even on the shield of a woman, sure. he would break his arm.
Sure. No, that's look, I of course, look, I understand. At the end of the day, Peter, it you know, with Muslims, it comes down to also a matter of belief mm-hmm. and
yeah.
faith.
Yeah.
This okay. is ultimately
okay. that's okay.
This
that's
is okay. This, this is really I that's could tell okay. you I could tell you all the stories and everything, and you don't believe it. That's fine because mm. you don't have
yeah.
that belief. That's not a problem.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
But if I'm saying I'm a Muslim and I'm
I
saying,
accept it. I yeah, accept your
Muhammad,
belief.
This will happen. And this is where we have a division, but mm-hmm. we kind of agree to disagree.
And, yeah, and I never said there were not women which fought.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
And especially if there was a critical situation, if the you know, if the men were out and you know. I don't know if you watched all our podcasts, but I once explained it. I said, think about it. If there's a tribe of people, you know, a native kind of, and it was in Mohammed's days, it was like that. These were nomadic, you know.
Yes.
I don't have to explain it to you.
Sure.
And they never would have sent the women to war because the most valuable being on earth is a woman because she's able to have children and one man can inseminate 100 women.
Right.
So if one man dies, that's no problem. If 100 men are dying, it's no problem.
Yeah.
But if one woman is dying, the tribe will extinct.
But on the other side, but on the other side, when you see that tribe was 300 people, and of course it was mixed. Let's say 60% male, 40% female.
They protected the women because
you can't. When 1,000 people come and attack you, you send everyone they do now in a neighborhood country. They provide everyone with a gun.
Right.
Yeah, but these are not female warriors. It's a kind of existential situation, horrible.
But they still could fight because they learned how to fight.
This is the thing. Although we you know we always tend to believe that all these disciplines is only for males. You must understand in these communities they would teach these disciplines to the girls too.
I don't believe it.
Right.
That's one thing. And also Petra Englander says this. I don't believe it because you know what? Back then in this, it's my opinion, what I found out and I read a lot and so on. In the old cultures, the role images were you know, the women were did this and that, and men did this and that. And, you know, in our modern societies, like we call them, we say, no, everyone is the same and everyone could do the same. And that's, in my opinion, the breakdown of civilization. Because think about it. In our Western civilizations, let's say a mother has 3 children. And she should go to work, but the state will pay another person to educate her children in the kindergarten or somewhere.
Yeah,
that's just crazy.
But on the other side, Peter, why should then, when this is right, any woman on this planet need to learn self-defense? Then they would be always safe because a man always protect her.
Yes. That's so why,
but it's not. You see, even in Austria, you see that the
girls,
they get stabbed because they didn't have any.
I don't say they don't should know how to shoot or how to fight.
No. That's why they got taught all the weaponry and all the fighting styles.
Yeah, but
of course you maybe don't send them in the first place on the battlefield, but they knew how to fight.
But it's a big step, a big difference. If you say, I teach my girl how to. To defend herself or to say they are female warriors.
So
it's a big difference.
Let me then clarify. If we talk about female warriors in Islam, it is a small proportion, I admit. It's not like hundreds and hundreds of them. Of course, the women had their role in society. They understood that. But you always get exceptions in society. You know, you can have, let's say you have 5 children.
Totally agree.
You have 5 children. They're not all the same, okay? You have one boy, he's very shy, he's very soft.
You and have one crazy girl.
Very strong.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So everyone has different characteristics, yeah. attitudes. So there were some of these companions of the Prophet who, you know, just wanted to help in any way they could. And because they were gifted with athletic ability, with strength, with being good with the sword, very good with the bow and arrow, etc., good with the horse. So they would be allowed to come and fight. So this
I totally understand this and I agree.
Good.
But what I always criticize is in today's society.
Yeah, this is not a society anymore.
It's not a society anymore. Yeah. That's true.
This and the woke
you know, mentality. If you're watching new, you know, Amazon or Netflix or movies, there are female fighters.
Right.
You know, there is how was it? I don't remember. You know, and this is kind of the feminist movement.
Yes.
So and think about it. We talked about before with Armin. Think about it. I really love women.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And they now tell the women they are great when they behave like men.
Mm.
So if they have a kind of business suit and they are tough managers or warriors or, you know, then they are cool. So in fact, that feminists are the real women haters because they tell them you have to behave like a man, then you are nice. And then you're strong. And the idea of strong, some women say to me, you're afraid of strong women. And I say, you know what? If you're talking about strong women, then there must be also weak women. So tell me, who are the weak women? If you know what? And that's the crazy thing in our society nowadays.
The only thing I could
my opinion.
If I would have a daughter, I would raise her in, let's say, in some fighting skills, in bow and arrow and the stuff in the same way as if I would have a son. That's for sure. Because
if she likes to
continue, and if they like it, I will support them. But it's simply that at least they have a base knowledge of 100%. What's going on.
Yes, guys, I have three children.
Yeah,
I have
only three.
Only three. I have a son. He's 18 now.
Yeah,
I have two daughters. 16, 13.
Okay,
so they have seen me do various these disciplines. They know that I do the archery and the riding and things. I never forced anything on them, but I gave it to them. If you like it, we develop. If you don't like it, try something else. But I try to make sure one of these fitra disciplines they must know. As a father. So 2014, my son and myself, we started jiu-jitsu. 1 year later, my daughters started. So now we're going together. We have good family time. They are with their partners. I'm with my partners. Sometimes we go together. We're sharing this experience.
You have something to talk about.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. But what's important, they know how to defend themselves. So even at the club now, they will go with someone older than them. Even a male, for example, they can handle themselves. They're not scared in any way. And when they come out of the club, then they still have their own character. Sometimes they're a bit shy. You know, they put their scarf on, whatever. They're normal, you see. So it's not that, I know maybe this is not what you're saying, Peter, but about the female warriors, yes, on the battlefield, they were savage, you know. They do the job. But when they come off, they know their role and they know they still keep covered and protected and shy, etc. So it's not as if
they're
trying to really show off or anything like that.
That sounds very romantic, Jan.
Each to their own.
But you know, I don't know how it is in Islamic cultures, but we talked about before, Armin and me, you know, when we were young, it was some 100 years ago, when you had to go to the father of the girl you like to go with her to the movies or for a walk or something, and you had to ask him. And you had to bring the mother a bunch of flowers and say, "Oh yeah, Miss, Mrs., and so on." And then you walked out into a bar, into the cinema, in the movies or somewhere, and then you had to walk her back.
Of course. To the door.
To the door.
Time, in time, what
and
the father
if
told you.
If you were lucky, you got a kiss in front of the door, and then you walked home.
Who is not romantic? And,
yeah.
Yes, I'm romantic. But today, they tell our girls, you can walk alone through the darkest street. Nothing will happen to you.
I don't agree, Peter. I don't agree because they would include me and I would never do that.
What?
They, when you say they, you include me too, because I am they from your perspective, but I don't do that. It's the same like today is Women's Day.
When I'm walking,
I'm sorry,
I'm
ladies, but if
day,
only one day is Women's Day, then something is wrong. For me, every day is Women's Day.
Right.
That's why I posted a nice picture about Women's Day.
Yeah, James Bond career, of course.
But look, you know, look, Peter, unfortunately, this is, look, you know, modern day, you know, morals and principles and things, you know, things are changing all the time. This is why, again, for a Muslim.
But that's why they get raped. That's why they get raped in a dark street.
Understood.
Because they tell them everything is okay. You don't need a weapon. You don't need to protect yourself. You don't need to know how to defend yourself because everything is safe. Just the police needs a gun.
I understand. Look, at the same time, this is why we feel it's important to empower, especially boys and the girls, in terms of everyone should have a minimum knowledge of self-defense. Everyone. My wife, my mother, everyone.
And it's not even that you have to use it. You go with a different self-confidence through the street.
Exactly.
Because you know I could respond if there is something.
Yeah.
And then it's a matter of, you know, frequency and harmony. You don't get attacked because you send the signal of, you know, that's why you protect yourself because
with the jiu-jitsu, they say the best way to avoid a fight or the best way to neutralize a fight is to walk away.
Exactly.
It's not to try to engage and fight.
Of course.
Walk away, talk it out, walk away.
Walk away.
And you know, Jihad, in that sense, I'm closer to the Islamic culture who stay with the role images.
Right.
And don't tell you're safe when you're walking alone.
Sure.
And you know, in our Western cultures, when you say you walk the girl home after the cinema, they say, you if you like to be a cavalier, a chevalier, a caballero, a knight, then they say you're a Nazi.
Right.
That's true. That's true. And so I'm closer
because
to you
I don't
than you
agree
think.
On many of mainstream media things. I'm always a Nazi. I'm now a Nazi because I have
you
a different opinion of what is going on there with Russia and Ukraine. I have a different opinion of all this COVID. And that's why I'm a Nazi. It's okay if people only know the term when they don't understand what you're doing and they call you a Nazi, then it's simply their really poor, low level of education. And this is something doesn't bother me, you know, it doesn't even touch my behind.
Right.
I don't like to expand it like that. I just like to say, if you're saying in our Western culture, I like to protect my girl, they say you're a guy from yesterday.
Right, right.
You do the most natural thing, what is since millions of years, millions of years maybe, and you say, I like to protect my wife or my girl or, you know, or my friend even.
This brings me back to, again, the point of fitra. This is what I'm talking about. The original way that as Muslims, we believe God created us. man and woman, mm-hmm. they are the same, but not equal, because they have different abilities. Yeah. We understand that, okay?
Yeah.
You know, a man cannot give birth. A woman can give birth. Yeah. A man can do certain things, but it doesn't mean that one is lower or higher in the eyes of God.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, and
we're equal in that way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's equal. You know, and that's the biggest lie in history, that women ever were suppressed. Just try to suppress a woman. Try it.
Happens. Yeah. That's right.
It's the craziest idea. And they tell our scientists and our, you know, for thousands of years, the women were suppressed by man.
That's right. It's
crazy. Yeah. In every, you know, even from the antique times and from ancient times, we know powerful women. In Austria, we had Maria Theresia. She was a big empress. Mm. And Elizabeth I in England.
Right.
And there were lots of women. They were very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were not suppressed, but the other were suppressed. It's so crazy, so stupid.
This is why Islam also has this bad reputation of suppressing women, and women are covered and everything. Mm. You know, go and speak to any woman who's wearing a scarf. Ask them, who forced you to do this?
No one.
Is your father, is your husband, are you forced to do this? Most of them will say, it's my choice.
Exactly.
It's my choice.
Yeah. And I agree. And I really think, I'm sure there are some families where the father's putting pressure on the girls, take on the scarf and so on.
But
that's for sure.
Or
a kind of environment.
Right.
On the other hand, if, let's say, Germany, or I'm from Austria, I agree to say no. If you're a policewoman, a judge, or, you know, a kind of official, you can wear the scarf because you're in a different country. So when I'm traveling to Turkey or to Lebanon or somewhere, and they say you can't walk with shorts in the mosque, I wouldn't do it.
Right.
Or with the women, you know, with these tops, just walk.
Yeah.
They can't do it. I agree. But if they are in our country and our culture says, no, a scarf is not right for a teacher in our culture, you know, it has to go in both ways. If you decide to live in that country, that's my opinion.
Fair enough.
If you're private, if you walk out from your job, you can wear a scarf, you can do everything what you want, in my opinion.
The only thing I'd say on that, and I don't want to talk about politics too much, is just it's not so much a choice on, you know, just dress. For Muslims, scarf is a religious obligation. So
it's not in the Quran, if I'm right.
It is, but we don't want to go too much into that, because then we're going to go off topic. But
I did research. It isn't, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay, but if you say it is, okay. Okay, and even if it's just an interpretation of some text, is like it is. Mm. But every culture has the right to say, in our country, we like to have it like that.
Mm.
Like the Islamic State say, in our land, we like to have it like that. So the same right has to go in both directions, in my opinion.
But we have to also respect people's religious rights. So if in their religion, there is a obligation to wear the scarf, and in that country, they're saying now it's banned, it's illegal, you go to prison if you wear the scarf.
No.
Then this
becomes an issue. But you can't be a teacher, a police woman, or a judge, or like that. You can look, if I'm tattooing here a swastika on my forearm, I don't think I could get a judge, could become a judge in Austria.
Mm.
You know what you decide if or if I'm a skinhead or I don't know, I couldn't go into some jobs. And the same is true. I don't like to compare this, but just for example, if you're showing up openly, because religion is a private thing. I can believe on what I want. No problem with that. And you say, I like mosques. I like all that stuff. I like Muslim culture because, you know, I did really research and I love it and no problem with it. But you know, the other thing is that I don't judge the Muslims. They do it in our countries, but the politicians, they give them money or say, oh, yes, you can do everything. That's my opinion. So I don't have something against.
Since two years, it's not a problem because everybody runs around with a mask.
It's funny because exactly, you know,
crazy.
One thing is the mask. You know, in the UK, Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, he was making fun of Muslim women who was covering. And now he's telling everyone to cover. If you look at old Victorian pictures of archery. Not just archery, but just Victorian England, the public, the normal people. Very interesting. Many, many women wearing a scarf. Many women. Now, do we say they are oppressed?
No.
Why are they wearing a scarf? Because it was part of their modesty. It's part of the culture at that time. With time becoming modern, they want to take the scarf off. Things change. Values change. People's perceptions change. But why do we not say at that time in Victorian England, oh, they were oppressed, this was wrong? We don't say that.
Jed, I don't know if you know it. I'm living here in Austria in the countryside, you know, in a small village.
Okay.
And when I was a young boy, as far as I remember, the married women wore headscarves. Especially when they went to church.
Why did they wear that? Why?
Yeah, because they were nice women. So it's the same.
Look at the nuns in the Catholic Church. They maybe don't cover the face here, but they have everything around there.
Right.
Yeah, but they are nuns. They are not.
Okay, they don't work as a judge or as a policeman.
People,
example, do you ever see a picture, whether you believe Christianity or whatever, you ever see a picture of the Mother Mary without a scarf? See a picture of Mother Mary without a scarf?
I don't know, but I believe
not
you.
So far apart.
What
I find interesting, I think in Muslim culture, there are only two genders, right? There's the man and there's a woman. See, and that's why I like Muslim culture.
Right.
Because in nowadays in America, you have 75 different genders. And what is he now? And what is, it's quite simple.
Armin, in real Christianity is the same.
But do we have still, you know, Christianity somewhere?
Believers in Christianity say the same. They are just two genders. Yeah,
but they are all called Nazis now, right? Because
that is that Marxist communist shit culture.
Back to archery. Now we had a nice curve around everything. Back to archery. So then you started your archery range. But now
Marxist archery.
We're almost at 2 hours. I don't know if we want to extend it that much, but I would like to invite you again for sure because you have much more to tell us, and it's so interesting because I really like even this idea when you see the Turkish bows when they have writings on it or some phrase, I love it. They really take it seriously. They appreciate the weapon in a complete different way. When I was in Lebanon, they didn't care about it. I had these expensive Kiowa bows from Bearpaw, and I had a concrete field there. And they simply throw it on the floor and leave it. And I'm like,
Bearpaw.
But they didn't have the connection. That's why I like this. I'm always a little
No, it's very important. Look, in some of our classes that I'm teaching, especially if it's a Muslim class, I say, look, never put your bow on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you must always know how to take care of your equipment properly.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things are for us sacred. They're important.
Yeah.
We don't just throw it on the side. And there's a certain way you either put it on your shoulder or you hang it somewhere.
Yeah.
You must cover it when you unstring the bow, you put it in a cover, etc. So there's always levels of respect.
Respect and your weapon, yeah.
One of the other things maybe we can talk about next time, Armin, is a very important person at the end of the Ottoman period. His name is Najmuddin Okyay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard of him, but there's a picture. He's called the last Ottoman. They call him the last Ottoman.
Okay.
He's a very, very important personality. He was a master archer, number one. He was an arrow maker.
Mm-hmm.
He was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He was an artist as well. In Turkey, they have this type of art called Ebru.
Ebru, yeah.
I don't know if you saw this art. They put paint on water and they put the paper on and they lift it up.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful art.
Yeah.
He could do Ebru. He was a specialist in botany, in flowers.
Mm-hmm.
He knew all the different types of roses, the flowers. I mean, he was like encyclopedia, this guy. At the end of his life, when the Ottoman dynasty was falling apart, he was, there's a picture with him and he's holding his bow. He's sitting in his room.
Mm-hmm.
He's holding the bow and he has his arm out like this.
Mm-hmm.
With the bow there, and he's looking at the bow.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I like to understand it in this way, in that he is trying to give the bow and the knowledge, everything he has, but there's no one to take from him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the sad part. This is where Muslims, we lost a lot of our history and our culture, heritage. So now we're
trying It's not lost because you are here. And well, Murat is here.
Yes.
And so many are here.
It's and you know, lost. Many people, Peter, many, many Muslims tell me, they say to me, you must only learn from Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no. I said, knowledge is from God.
Mm-hmm.
He can give knowledge to Armin, to Peter, to Lucas, to this one.
Yeah.
I say, wherever I get knowledge, I take.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. Good,
and I put together and I make it my own. So, we must never be so narrow-minded that because if I only take from Muslims, I have very limited knowledge.
You would still
that would be stupid.
There is so I learned so much knowledge. Of course, my first teacher was Abdul Majid Christian Strada. I always respect him, and he's still my first teacher. But I learned so much from Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
So much from Mihai, so much from Murat, so much from
Sajid,
so much from Armin, many, from Ali, from Master Ki, so many people, because no one owns this knowledge.
Exactly.
No one owns this knowledge.
And, you know, sometimes I like to say, you can even learn from the stupidest person.
100%.
Because 100%. One thing they have in mind, you never thought about.
And you can learn from everyone. That's why you can learn sometimes even something from me, Peter. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Sometimes, not often, but I, you know, once in 10 years, I have this split second of enlightenment, and then I can give you something.
I write it down, so I.
No. This is too. It goes so fast. I have no time to write it down.
Jihad, because you said how to hold the bow, you know, the respect for the bow, and so, and I, you know, I'm a longbow archer.
Right.
And so if you a good or a mindful longbow archer, there's also something you can detect if you watch closely. When they put the bow on the ground, put it on their toes, on their shoe.
Yes.
It's something like that. Or I like to say, you know, Armin always saying I'm a kind of spiritual and esoteric guy.
Sure.
No, I'm not.
We are all.
You know, when I have a kind of a bow bag, you know, where I'm putting the longbow in.
Yes.
And I have some bow bags. You can put three bows inside because I do a lot of travel and showing up the bows. Mm. And so if I have a bow, which a real master made.
Yeah.
I can't put another bow in the same bag.
Yes.
Of course.
Too much respect, yeah?
When there are two bows, one is a big master and one is okay, he made a bow. Mm-hmm. So I can't put them in one bag because it's kind of bad.
I have that too. I have a few bows, they go in a separate bag, and other bows you can stuff in one bag altogether. Yeah. But really. But I think we finished because you sit on you. I think you need to eat something or something you should.
No, just a couple of distractions, but no problem. But
no, it's 2 hours. It's getting a little long. Yeah. I think we simply continue because we had this point where I have a story to tell where you said you had to touch them. You know, that the Muslim girls, and this is the next
for the next time we can talk maybe about the Najm al-Din Okyai. We talk about my archery in the schools.
Exactly.
Talk about archery when you're teaching Muslim girls. There's certain things you should know about, tactile and touch.
Mm-hmm.
All things we can talk about. But I appreciate your invitation, and it was very interesting.
But you know, I'm happy that we talked like we talked today because, you know, there's nothing very new to archery, but if we interchange cultures and we can talk our perspectives on different issues and ideas, I enjoy to talk. You know, like I said, I'm an atheist, but I like to talk about religion because I'm very interested in religion, and I'm looking podcasts about religion, esoteric stuff, and so on. I really enjoy it because I like to know more. Because if you know this, then you recognize how the people are thinking.
Right.
Yeah. And so I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's in many cases more valuable than to talk about how to draw a bow or something like that.
Yeah, I think you in the long run, you have to understand the religion and the culture that you understand the archery, or you do it the other way around. You do this way of archery and you understand a little the culture and the religion. So there are always a few ways, but of course, we simply share everything we have to share here on our podcast.
Yeah,
and it's fine.
Yeah, just fine.
Thank you so much, Ihad, for your time. It was very interesting to talk to you. It was really, really nice. I thought I need to calm down, guys. No, but it's an interesting and a very factual-based discussion, so I like this.
And now say a typically nice Muslim goodbye.
Okay, we say Assalamu alaikum.
Assalam. And I say alaikum assalam. And I say the other way around, right?
Yes. Alaikum assalam.
May peace be with you. So we have no queries, no arguments. May peace be with
you. Yeah. I wish you the same. Thank you very much for your
time. Thank you for your time.
We invite you very soon again, okay? Thank you very much, Ihad. Ciao.